You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is market historian Bob Hoy. He's the chief investment strategist for ChartsAndMarkets.com. He's speaking to us from Vancouver. Welcome back to the show, Bob.
Yeah, Jim, to be good with... It's good to be with you and with our listeners out there.
Now, Vancouver, very rainy. We have a so-called atmospheric river. We used to call these pineapple expresses because the weather system comes up from Hawaii. And yeah, in the Abbotsford area just east of Vancouver, heavy flooding once again. Hundreds of people
another
evacuated.
Hit. That's terrible. But, you know, the weather report guys with that one, they called it the Pineapple Express. I never, ever saw one pineapple delivered. And what the term they're using now is the with atmospheric river, and by gosh, I think that is accurate. And unfortunately, we had a horrible one, and now there, as you say, there's another one coming.
So. Yeah, well, it's already hit. Heavy flooding in Whatcom County, Washington State, just south of the Canadian border.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, nothing that we can do about it, no matter how much money you put into the market. You talk
I'm 17 stories up, Jim.
I'm only 8.
No, but also on high ground. I think the ground here is about 300 feet above the ocean.
So. I'm overlooking the Fraser River. I do have a life preserver on the balcony. It's
right,
for decorative purposes, but hey, anything in a storm. Now, I was going to say nothing we can do about it, but then I was going to say, what about market liquidity?
Oh, boy, are we having fun today.
Yeah, too much. Mm-hmm. And we're only drinking tea. We'll get into listener questions here. Our first one comes from Alvin. It's always nice to hear from the chipmunks. Bob, you often say that the senior sovereign currency becomes tremendously strong during post-bubble depressions, but in all your previous historic examples, the currencies were backed by gold. How can you be sure that this is really just gold becoming stronger and not the currencies?
Yeah, that's a good eye on that one. Now, the way I've been looking at it is that, one, the pattern is there, and back in the 18-19-20 period, 25, England was off of a gold standard, and you still had the great bubble of 1825 work out, and the Great Depression followed to 1895 or whatever it was, 20 years later, yeah. So I'm confident on that one, and so that makes the key pattern in a great financial bubble, and we have been in the greatest financial bubble, and it's become everything bubble. Think it all go down together. And now, specifically to treat with the U.S. dollar as the senior currency, I think the same thing will happen. And I always write it up that the senior currency becomes chronically firm. And the reason for that is that during the crazy mania, financial mania, most of the debt is done in New York City, being the financial center of the world. And then that debt is due and payable in U.S. dollars into New York. So the debt bubble, which everybody is imagining all kinds of things, is quite straightforward and the same as in the past. The problem is servicing the debt. So let's use Argentina as an example. Their country has to sell something, tin or whatever, grains, cattle, in order to get their hands on dollars, in order to meet their obligations in New York. So to me, it'll work out again, and the fact that the U.S. is not on a gold standard won't change the pattern. The world owes those U.S. dollars into New York, and you can consider it as an immense short position of dollars. And I'm staying with the story that the dollar is going to become chronically firm, and it's going to drive the policymakers wild. Can you imagine the Federal Reserve System being unable to depreciate its own currency? I mean, it boggles the mind, doesn't it? Yeah. Anyways, it's going to be interesting.
And Elvin goes on to ask, given today's U.S. dollar fiat currency, might a post-bubble massive expansion of liquidity by the Fed have the effect of, in fact, weakening rather than strengthening the U.S. dollar during a depression?
The point to be made is that in the 1929 crash, 1930s depression, in the 1960s, economic commentators said that the Fed tightened credit in 1929 into 1930, and that caused the depression. No, there was evidence that the Fed was easy all through the piece, but the problem is that the markets tightened up, and liquidity disappeared, and everything was for sale. So you had stocks and low-grade bonds and commodities all getting the hammer. And this is what I think is going to happen again. And we'll go through it, rehearse it once more. In a great bubble, everything goes up at the same time, and then it all goes down virtually at the same time. And whereas in normal business cycle, the stock market would peak, say, 10 to 12 months before the economy. So that's why leading central bankers and whatnot have the S&P 500 as in their leading indicators. And they didn't do enough research to realize that there are times when the stock market is not a leading indicator. And so my view is that once this speculation, and it may be blowing out kind of in the last month or so, and once it breaks and goes down, the economy will be heading south fairly closely as well. Not a happy picture.
Now, this is a very timely question from Alvin, with silver hitting record highs. Back in the late 70s, early 80s, the Hunt brothers in Texas made an attempt to corner the silver market. He asks, what were the mistakes the Hunts made in attempting to corner silver?
Oh, the big mistake was attempting a corner. Oh, yeah, and he got all kinds of, you know, Middle Eastern money in on it, everything, and it just became a mania, and a mania blew out. Mm. And, yes, the silver-gold ratio can be a good guide on intense speculation, and so we'll watch it and see how it all goes.
And Elvin asks one final question. Could a similar small market, say platinum, be cornered today?
Well, I don't know. It depends on who wants to try a corner. They don't happen. Attempted corners don't happen all that often. And it would be, I don't care what it's in, it'd be fun to watch another one.
Well, I think today, though, we have people with tremendous wealth, Jeff Bezos or Elon Musk, where their valuations are more than most countries are worth.
Yeah, there's still new big money out there that can get sucked into hot games, and maybe buying silver now is getting sucked into a hot game. Hmm. But, we're just watching it, because silver is actually, the silver bugs, every year they look at supply-demand fundamentals, and there's always a shortage of silver, so it's always going to go up. But they seem not to understand that silver has a very important financial aspect, and that is it can certainly go up, but it will signal the beginning of the next contraction, and we can discuss that on, you know, future editions.
Well, also with silver, again, if you, it's used industrially. It's the best conductor of electricity. So, you know, it has a lot of industrial uses. A solar panel uses something like 2/3 of an ounce of silver to be made. And solar panels are everywhere now. So, you know, it is being consumed. It isn't just sitting in a vault somewhere.
Yeah, I know. And it was the same in 1929 as well. There's always unique reasons at the top of a bubble that it's going to keep going. And I'm just open-minded on it, watching. Hey, we have huge action. It's the everything bubble. And it's let's put it this way, Jim. It's beginning to falter. So we'll just see. And on our work back in April, it was that you could have a strong markets up to mid-year. And then when we got to mid-year, we looked at it and said, hey, this can be really strong into September. I think the high was October 29. So close enough. And the market, as we say, is faltering. And that is a warning signal, just the faltering itself.
Now we go to questions from a longtime listener, Willem Gruters in the Netherlands. His first question, I see a number of indications that could point to a major multi-decade market mania. Just look at the silver-gold ratio going ballistic. People have listened to HowStreet.com for years, know the real meaning of the silver-gold ratio. Bob, what is the meaning?
Yeah, well, we just finished talking about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it gives, when it gets dynamic, it gives a signal. All you have to watch is for the reversal.
Ah.
And now, as to this mania now continuing, in my mind, that is highly unlikely. I think we're close. If the top's not in already, it's very close to it.
And further from Mr. Gruters, the Fed cutting rate and announcing to starting to buy T-bonds out of the market made all the gold, silver, and commodity bugs come out of the woodwork in droves to say that 2026 is going to be the bull year for the precious metals and commodities, but U.S. Treasuries with maturities of up to, say, 5 years are far from convinced that good times are here again. The yields on those maturities are going down or staying flat. What's the story there, Bob?
Well, let's just cover interest rates.
Yeah.
In a great bubble, the even short rates go up. And you can have good action in junk bonds and in high-grade like treasuries. And then one of the keys is that when the T-bill rate, 3-month T-bill or 6-month, whatever, turns down. Now, in June of 1929, the 3-month bill was at 5%, and it had dropped significantly by the end of September, and the Fed didn't do its cut in the administered rate until the end of October. And we've recently done a chart here that our listeners may be interested in, as we've just taken the history of the Federal Reserve announced rate changes with the T-bill rate, and the T-bill rate leads the Fed. So some would say, oh, wow, the T-bill rate's discounting that the Fed is going to do something, and I would suggest that T-bill rates going down, the Fed has to follow with a rate cut. Now, the street is also celebrating that a series of rate cuts is going to be good. Declining short rates, whether it's T-bills or the Fed following with administered rates, is your worst nightmare. And it's very simple. In a boom, short rates go up, and in a bust, short rates go down. And I've traced that way back, and then even back in the 1825 bubble, I did get some indications of interest rates. So, it probably has worked forever. So, the world getting excited about falling short rates and Fed cuts is going to be another disaster with short rates falling.
We'll take a look at some of the headlines that caught Bob's eye right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Bob Hoy. First headline from Zero Hedge. Silver shrugs off hawkish cut fears. Goldman traders note, it's different this time. Oh, Bob, how many times have we heard when there's a peaking stock market, it's not going to crash. It's different this time. How many times have we heard that?
Oh, I think it occurs with every, hot market. They think, we've got the special story this time, and it's going to continue.
Ha! So basically, our headline is going to be, it's different this time. No, it's not.
Yes. Good editing.
From Yahoo Finance, many transformative business opportunities in Canada will be driven by government initiatives in the near term.
Yeah, driven out of the country, I'll tell you. Ever since the Trudeau administration started 9 years ago, they have been anti-business, anti-individual, everything. And capital, in the sense of money, goes to where it is friendly. It doesn't like regions where the government hates capital, so it goes away. And it has been going away. Canada is just a disaster relative to the G7 or stuff like that. And what's more, in the final 4 years of Trudeau's term, the current Prime Minister, Carney, was his advisor. And Carney is a green zealot. For him, the amount of CO2 in the air is evil. And now they had a memorandum of understanding recently that Carney did sign on, but it's all pretty loose, and he did it to look good. But while he is prime minister, there will be no pipelines built. He wants to keep hydrocarbons in the ground. And he is very forceful with it. I mean, this guy is a real zealot on climate.
Do you think his memorandum of understanding with Alberta on pipelines means anything?
Not at all. And then recently there was a policy meeting in the House. And leader of the opposition, Pierre Poilievre, asked each Liberal member, would they support it? No. That was a feel-good memorandum, and it has absolutely no meaning. And Carney will oppose any pipelines or increasing production. And there must be some way of... Maybe if there is a financial hit, the opinion against him may be such that for the sake of the Liberal Party of Canada, he would resign, maybe in the first quarter. We'll see.
Also in British Columbia, a financial disaster looms, because, personally engineered by British Columbia Premier David Eby, when he was Attorney General, he amended the UNDRIP, the UN Declaration on Aboriginal Rights, to make it almost impossible for anything to be developed in BC without Aboriginal approval first. Nobody wants to invest in real estate here. Nobody wants to build a mine now. Nobody wants to do anything that involves major money. Banks are refusing to mortgage properties because of it. And this is a one-man caused disaster. He did it.
Oh, yeah. No, he is one evil dude, I'll tell you. But, you know, many years ago, when I was a geologist working in the field, there was something east from Clinton in there that we went in to look at and somehow ended up talking with the native community there. And they said, where are you going? Well, over there. He said, that's a holy area. So we said, okay, tell us specifically where your holy area is. No, you tell us where you want to go. And then it becomes a holy area. So this is the mentality of what you're dealing with some of these people.
And our final headline here, common sense hasn't won on climate file yet, a special to the Financial Post.
Yeah, that's a good one. Common sense hasn't won on climate file yet. And what that means is that there's still some loonies out there really believing that global warming is a threat. And it's the first time in a billion years of life on Earth where warming was bad. I mean, 600 million years ago or something like that, the Earth was one big slush ball. So where was life at that time? Well, you can find out. You just go up to some old glacier in the summertime and look under the overhanging ice and tell me about how much life is there. And in the last extension of the ice age, that ice was down to where Chicago is now. So let's imagine we're in Chicago, lift the ice field up, and what kind of life would be there? So the cult that is pushing that warming is bad is absolutely insane.
Before we go, you have a little Christmas story for us from the past.
A little anecdote. Yeah, this is when I was at university, and my family was still living in Penticton, in one of the valleys in southern British Columbia. So we went back to from university on Christmas break, and we decided we were going to get some really good stuff to drink. And it was, you know, maybe a 40-minute drive to the border, U.S. border. Once you got across, the guy there would sell you anything because he knew that our age didn't matter because we were heading back into Canada. And so I thought I had to get the real high-test stuff. It was 151 overproof rum. So I stashed that under the back porch steps. And then when we'd go out, my chums would call at the front, and I'd go out the front door, double back to the porch, get the big bottle out, and then pour off a little into a flask I had, and then put it in my pocket, and then we go back to the street and head out wherever we were partying. So this one time I doubled around there, and imagine a snowy yard, and I'm pouring it off. The back door porch door opens, the light comes on, my mom's standing there and looking down, and she is now, "Son, are you sure this stuff won't freeze out here?" And that would not freeze. So I said, "No, Mom, it's not going to freeze." Ran down the driveway, got with my friends, and we probably had a pretty good party.
150 proof, I would think so.
Oh, yeah.
And, yes, it won't freeze. Isn't that antifreeze? Didn't they spray the same thing on airplane wings to keep them from freezing up?
Yeah, 151 overproof rum.
Best of the season for you, Bob.
Yep, Jim, and look forward to talking next time.
My guest has been market historian Bob Hoy. He's the chief investment strategist for chartsandmarkets.com. If you have any questions for Bob, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on X at House Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.